Hello, this is French Reno Diaries Uncensored, your no-fluff guide to renovating in France. I'm Rosie.
I'm Michaela.
And I'm Sue.
And we all run tradie-related businesses here in France with our partners and husbands.
And today we're putting the spotlight on planning.
If you want to build anything, then you need to know if you can build it before you buy it. So you can't just buy a property and then think, oh, I'll just put a nice extension on the side. Because it might be you've not got constructible land and they won't allow you.
You've got to do the same due diligence, whether it's in a historical or whether it's in a town, whether you're in the middle of nowhere and think you can do what you want because you've not got any very close neighbours. That doesn't mean that you're exempt from any of it. You still have to go by whatever that commune's rules are.
So let's get into it.
We're tackling the topic of planning and how good planning can help you avoid hefty fines and being stopped in your renovation tracks. Planning consists of a plethora of processes, and there's no two finer people that can explain what the planning is than Rosie and Sue. So, ladies, if I was to purchase a house that had outbuildings, I wanted to do some renovation, I needed to change the windows and all sorts of things, what would be my first port of call? What would be the first thing that I need to do as a fresh new homeowner in France that doesn't know a thing about planning?
I would say, if you're buying a, and I have to admit that we were quite naive in all this when we moved here. I will admit that. However, we did go to the mayor or your town hall, wherever, and say what we wanted to do, and we asked what we needed to do. And I think anybody that's buying or have bought, we'll go on the scenario that you've bought the house, needs to just pop in, say, right, I'd like to do this, this and this to the house. Do I need any authorization to do this? And most good mayors will tell you what you need to do.
Yeah, they've probably got an urbanist department where there's a lady or gentleman working for that specific reason, rather than the mayor himself. But yeah, I agree with you. There'll be somebody in the local mairie who can guide you the correct way.
Oh, we're a tiny, tiny hamlet. We don't have anything like that.
What, only the mayor?
We've got the mayor and the secretary. That's it.
Oh, right.
So no, they don't. Okay. They don't all have those.
So the mayor has to know everything.
Not necessarily. Usually the secretary, actually. They usually know more than the mayor.
Yeah, for me, one document is the PLU, because every commune has a PLU. So it's like a plan local d'urbanisme. So basically a PLU is a massive document in some cases. I mean, we live in Dinan, and the PLU is probably about, I think it's 85 pages long. And you can download it off the internet, but you can also get it off your local mairie. You have to be able to speak French, though, I have to say, because I've not found an English version of it. So it's complex, but a PLU will tell you everything that you can and can't do in the commune, and every commune's different. So it'll tell you, like, what colour you can paint your shutters, if you can change your windows, and it'll give you, I mean, ours in Dinan, it's got actual diagrams of windows that you can do and you can't do. So if you're in, like, the Intramuros in Dinan, then you have to have, like, petit bois on your windows, the exact size of them, what the windows can be made of, and what colours you can do. So in Dinan, we've probably got 13 nuances of white, but you can't have white. So, you know, that's one of the first documents. And that's probably, if you go to your mairie, that's probably what he's going to consult. And then look up, and he can advise you from that.
I also have to say, some communes don't have a PLU, and if they don't have one, then it's really complex, because I've just done a DP for somebody for changing their windows, and there's no PLU for their village. So then it just goes on the general.
Well, yeah, that's what I would assume. It's like, it's the next biggest town to them.
Yeah.
They'll be in the conglomeration of that town. So yeah, it's the same for Dinan. So Dinan's like, they call it Dinan agglomeration. So it incorporates a lot of other villages that don't have their own PLU. That's right.
No, but ours is, no, what I'm saying is ours isn't incorporated into another one. I think Dinan's different. Oh. It's a historical town. There's right. There's a general PLU that's a general
for the whole of France.
For the whole of France, and then each commune has their own individual one. If your commune doesn't or isn't connected to another one, then you go on the generic one.
Right. Okay.
Sue, you mentioned another acronym, DP. Can you explain what a DP is?
So a DP is a déclaration préalable de travaux. So basically, if it's not a permis de construire, then a PC, then it's basically for simplified planning notifications. So you mentioned about changing your windows, like Rosie was saying about changing windows in Dinan, you'd most likely put in a déclaration préalable. And it's anything really that changes the outside appearance of your home. We had to get one to change the tiles on our roof. If it's like for like, exactly like for like, and it's renovation, then no. But if you're changing the colour, the material, and it's slightly different, a slightly different style, then yeah, you need to put in a decoration préalable through your local town hall.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that follows. Like, go to your Mary, ask him, look at the PLU if you feel inclined to do so, because it will tell you a lot of information that you will need to know. And I think that's important for people who are buying houses, because you should, ideally for me, you should look at the PLU first, and then you'll know when you buy your house, you can do all the things that you wanted to do to it. And then the DP comes after that.
Can an English speaker access the PLU via a French government website?
You can look on servicepublic.fr.
Service public, mm-hmm.
You can also look at your local Mary's website. I mean, in Sue's case, maybe not. They've not got one on there. So maybe consult the local governmental website. But Mary's in larger towns or cities do have a place on their websites where you can look at the PLU. But not to get too technical, I mean, a PLU is for people who can navigate French. And if you're in doubt, I recommend that people go and consult an architect or even a very good estate agent. Not all estate agents know these things, I have to say. And I'm not an architect. We're not architects. So these are things that we've had to, you know, experience and go through. And we've got experience of doing DPs in our business because we've got Abigail, who is an interior architect. So she does a lot of drawing for Déclaration Préalables for us. So we've had a lot of experience for doing them for clients. But yeah, I recommend people actually do a little bit more diving into things before they actually buy. That would be my takeaway from the beginning for people to do that. And then if another one for me is, this is like getting into like the boring domains of like planning, which not everyone talks about, is there something called a certificate d'urbanisme, which if you want to build anything, then you need to know if you can build it before you buy it. So you can't just buy a property and then think, oh, I'll just put a nice extension on the side, because it might be you've not got constructible land and they won't allow you. So if it's over 20 meters squared, maybe you can put a small one on, but you'd have to put in a déclaration préalable or permis de construire. And it actually happened to some people that I know recently who bought a lovely, I want to say 1960s pavilion, and they're right next to a classical monument. And this pavilion has got all the features of the 60s, some nice and not so nice that they don't want to keep, like the glass bricks in the walls and things like that that were great at the time but now don't fit in with their aesthetic. And they want to convert this pavilion into something amazingly modern. So a nice big veranda, glass veranda on the side, and they wanted to change all the windows. They've got like windows with the petit bois, like the little bits of wood that go over the kind of glazed bit. So you can't have just one pane of glass, and they wanted to change all the windows for one pane of glass so they could have a nice view out of the window, unobstructed. And they put a déclaration préalable in because their veranda is less than 20 meters squared, and everything got refused, everything. So now they've put in the declaration because they're next to an historical monument. So they've said, no, you have to keep the windows as they are with the petit bois. You have to do like for like if you change them. They can't even put in double glazing to the standard of what we would recommend sometimes for energetic value because it's in such a zone next to a historical monument that they say you can only, I think it's like 14 mil that you can go up to. You can't do any double glazing thicker than that because they don't like it. They say it's not in keeping with the area. Yeah, a but modern.
What about energy efficiency of the property?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Thrown out all the time.
Goes out the window. If you're next to a historical building, a chateau, say, even if you spend all the money in the world on it and you do everything, you know, really high standard, they'll make you take it out. Or they'll refuse your declaration. So, yeah, there are a lot of things to be aware of.
If they refuse the declaration and you still went ahead and did it, how do people in these kind of offices know that you've done what you shouldn't be doing?
I think in the first instance, you've got to be pretty stupid to go ahead and do it if you've been refused. That's my first thought.
I agree, because you've already, what you've done by submitting the DP or the permis de construire is you've alerted the Bâtiment de France to your property. So it's all on record all of a sudden. So they keep it on record. I know specifically for Dinan and places like Dinan that are medieval cities, they are so rigid about stuff like that. And they will have it all on record. I can tell you a story about a property that we have in Dinan where we did a permis de construire. It was passed. And then our guys started working on it. And one of our guys, we had a window at the front and a front door. And he took the stonework down of the window and opened it up as a door. And it was something we didn't perceive was going to happen. Anyway, the mistake happened. And we had a local architect who lived around the corner who went past every day and went to the Mary and said, they've done this and they shouldn't have done this. And then about five people descended on us and said, well, that's not on your permis de construire. Why have you done that? And we had to say, I'm really sorry, it's a mistake. We'll put it back. And we did. And in the end, we did a modification of the permis de construire and made it into a front door. So now it is going to be a door after all. But yeah, you can't just, in areas like ours, we can't just do that. I know people will argue in certain parts of France, you can get away with it. And I do see this quite a lot in the expat community where people are like, oh, I just did it, just do it. But I wouldn't advise it.
Right, so your area, Rosie, is Bâtiment de France. It's historical. It's what happens when there are villages that then at some point, either now or in the future, become historical villages of under Bâtiment de France?
Well, obviously, I have a story about that. We're doing placement windows and installation for one of the local Bastide villages. And I say to clients, oh, well, have you checked if you can do it? You've got to put a DP in for this because you're changing the windows. We were the only people she had around that actually mentioned that. And it's probably a good thing that they do, because within the last kind of 2 years, that particular village has gone under Bâtiment de France. Now, it wasn't. And it's because the village has gone for a big government patrimony grant to do a big development in the square. So they've got like a 1.4 million grant from the historic. So that's put that area now officially as a historical area. And now it's put everybody under Bâtiment de France. And the Mary actually said as well, don't go around the village and look at what other people have, because it's not like that anymore. They could have done it 5 years ago.
That's a really good tip, actually. Yeah. We've had... Specifically, we've had clients recently that we've finished a job for, and we did the Declaration Préalable for them. And they're in a kind of country town called Henon, which is it's out of Dinan. You wouldn't think it was in an historical area, but there is a chateau about, I want to say, a kilometre away. And when we put in the DP, Batimon de Fons came back. And obviously we gave it to the local mairie. It went to Batimon de Fons. And they came back and they said, you have to do this, 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 and this. And the clients said to us, when it came back, they said to us, we were stood in the front garden and they're like, look at our neighbours. They've got UPVC windows. Why can't we have UPVC windows? Because they're so much cheaper than wooden windows, like oak windows or, you know, even Bois Exotique. Why can't we have that? If they've got that, why are they allowed? So that's a really good reason, Sue, as to why
it's... Yeah, well, you see, the next village to us as well has got a huge, beautiful chateau, and about, I don't know if it, within the last 10 years, they wanted a grant to do it up. So they went to the patrimoine people, and to do that, obviously, you then register it as a historical building, which means it opened up access to grants. But what that then did is put that village... So it did pee a lot of people off in the fact that they couldn't. Once that was status was put in and they got those grants, all those people, if they wanted to put a pool in, they had to put a green one in or one that looked natural. And there was all these regulations that then put the whole village into it. So it sounds like maybe the UPVC windows went in, then the chateau put it in and registered it as a historical building to access grants, which then means everybody in the surrounding area is then under Batimon de Fons.
Wow, okay.
Which begs the question, when people are looking at properties and they sign their compromis de fond and they buy, do these kind of things not get flagged up as, you know, back in the UK, if you purchased, you had local searches. Is there not anything similar here?
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, go and consult the PLU. I mean, if recently it's gone to the Batimon de Fons, they'll have a new PLU for that area, and then they'll give all the detail on it. So it does kind of go back to that first document that is really difficult for a lot of people to consult. So I think that's where architects and really good estate agents and people like us who know these things come in handy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't ever profess anyone to just land in France and think that they could negotiate that. If they're wanting to buy, you know, we all fall in love with the historical buildings and the beauty and character of the architecture. But if you're really in love with that, then you would want to preserve it. And in that preservation, you should do your due diligence and make sure that you know the changes that you can make to that, and you're not going to upset the locals or the, you know, the locals who have to now abide by those rules.
Also, during the buying process, a chateau could then, while they're doing the buying process, it could then be doing the same process itself, so it might not flag up.
Right,
it's true. The mairie would know in that.
Possibly, or it could flag up 12 months later and you've not put yours in yet. So at the time you bought it, it wasn't, but then 12 months down the line, somebody could come over and go, oh, let's get some grants. Let's put this as a historical building, not realising that it's going to affect everybody in their commune.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of moving parts, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you've put me off buying in Dinan and anywhere historical that requires me to look at the PLU and then...
And everyone else listening to this. So,
I now want to buy a 3-bedroom bungalow, urban. I've got a nice bit of garden, and I want to build a carport or a shed. What should I be aware of when doing things or building things in my backyard?
Do you know, it's the same process?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And it's pretty much the same. You've got to do the same due diligence, whether it's in historical or whether it's in a town, whether you're in the middle of nowhere and think you can do what you want because you've not got any very close neighbours. That doesn't mean that you're exempt from any of it. You still have to go by whatever that commune's rules are. So in all instances, you definitely just double check before you sign. Or if you are buying a property and you want to extend, put a suspensive clause into the compromis that says you're going to go for the CU, which is kind of like it's almost like a pre-planning. It's not an actual authorization, but it's almost without spending the money on an architect and doing all the big plans.
Is that the certificate d'urbanisme?
Yeah.
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 You can ask your Mary for that. That's quite a simple process anyone can do themselves.
And it's all to do with the zoning of the land as well, and how whether it's zoned as constructible, non-constructible, agricultural, urban. So that's a really important thing. If you're going to do a big development, you either, a lot of properties are sold with it in place, but I think it only lasts for so long.
Yeah, 2 to 3 years, maybe.
And if you don't build within that time, and the PLU has changed and they've reduced the things, obviously you're protected within that time. If you don't start your build within that time and it lapses, it could be rezoned.
Right, so I have to start again.
Yes, you would. Okay. And you might get a different answer next time.
It could have been rezoned as agricultural. It could have been rezoned as non-constructible. So you've...
And rezoning happens quite a lot. That did happen to one of our jobs.
Yeah.
We were doing a conversion of a barn into a change of usage, say, and it went through planning, and midway through planning, so the architect did the permis de construire on this one, midway through planning, they changed the zonage. So it went from, they wanted to make it into a commercial building. So it went from at the beginning when the permis went in, you were allowed to convert an agricultural building into a public space. And by the end of the planning, the PLU had changed completely for the zonage. And it was a farming community. It was an historical building, but that wasn't what dictated it in this instance. It was the fact that the local commune had decided they were going to make it invalid to convert agricultural buildings because they were a farming community and they'd had enough of people converting their farming buildings into habitation. So they decided to change the PLU, and it went through halfway through. And in this case, it got passed. The architect did a really good job actually and found a loophole where it was said because the date of the submission was before it changed, then it was okay. Changing halfway through does happen. And if you're doing it yourself, I mean, if you're just doing a déclaration préalable, you can't do a permis de construire yourself. But if you're doing a déclaration préalable yourself, then I don't know how you handle that situation, because the relationship between an architect and local town planning is probably a well-respected one. And if you're trying to fight against that as an individual, I'm not sure how well that would go.
So I'm back to my construction in my backyard. Do I need to tell my neighbours? Do they need to be advised of what I'm doing? How do they get informed, and can they object?
Well, there is a process that they can, isn't there? A declaration préalable, you have to put it up for 2 months.
Right.
You have to put a sign outside. You do with a permit as well. They can object. I mean, I don't know any that have been refused after they've been kind of passed.
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose you have some difficult neighbours sometimes.
So in your lines of business then, ladies, you've never not had your DPs refused?
We did have one instance where a neighbour was very annoyed, let's say, and he tried his best to make the development of the building difficult by marking off parking places and by the millimetre where his land ended and where the clients began, and why the clients, or us, because we were the company renovating for the clients, why we couldn't step on his land without written permission going through the mairie that came back to him. But he was literally like within sight of us in his kitchen watching everything. So we couldn't go to him and say, is it okay if we just go on your land today because we need to access the sidewall to get up to the chimney? No, we had to do everything in written permission every single time.
Oh,
so yeah,
gosh.
That did happen.
Hopefully they're quite rare.
Hopefully. It's not happened again, but yeah.
Although we do know of a case where somebody didn't put a declaration, a DP in, and they built a pergola with a roof in their garden, and the neighbour complained and it had to be taken down. So if you don't follow the process and get it put in, it can happen that a neighbour will or could moan and you have to remove everything.
So had they had the affichage permis or permis, then that would have given the neighbour adequate time to kind of go, what you're doing, I don't want that being put there because of X, Y, and Z. And because they didn't have the DP and then the affichage, then did that lead to the neighbour then taking...
To be honest, I don't know the nitty-gritty of it or whether the neighbour knew they hadn't put any planning in, so they complained about it, or whether the fact that it was there. So, yeah, but the fact they hadn't put the planning in. So,
yeah, I don't think it's a risk that you should take by not putting the panel up. I mean, it's so easy to fill in. You get one from Poinpei or even probably Leroy Merlin, and you just fill it in. You just put your planning permit number on it, your name, your address, if you've got an architect or not, or if you're the maître d'ouvrage. If you're a homeowner and you're running your own project, then you're called the maître d'ouvrage. And you just put your name on it and then what a brief description of what the permit has allowed you to do, and you put it outside for 2 months.
Right.
So if you don't, I'd say invariably people don't know you're going to do any building work, and people around you might not care. But if you've got one person who lives next door or a few doors down who really does
object,
take it upon themselves to get involved, they could denounce you to the mayor and say, well, they never put a panel up, so I've not had chance to even know about this. And actually, I do object.
I think the law is if you put the panel up, they've got 2 months. If you don't, they have 6.
Ah, right.
So if you don't put the panel up, the length of time of objection is extended because you haven't put the panel up and you've not been transparent.
Right, okay. I suppose they can go to the mayor and they could give the, like if a neighbour's got a problem, they could give the permit number, and then the mayor would have to give them the actual documentation to show them exactly like every single thing that you've submitted to tell them. So they have that right to see the whole process and what you are actually going to do. Mm. Yeah.
I think you can actually find them online as well.
Yeah. It makes sense that you should be able to. Yeah.
Going a bit more digital now. So some communes will be able to find it online.
And I know that in Dinan, again, outside the mairie, every time they've passed one, they put it on a board outside the mairie. So you can actually go, toddle on by and go, oh, what permis de construire have been passed this week? And you can see.
So they've got that.
It is quite transparent, yeah.
So what are the consequences of someone breaking these rules or not doing the right thing?
We haven't experienced it personally, but a friend of mine who has a second home here has a swimming pool, above ground pool actually, in their back garden, which has been decked around it. So it's not a temporary structure, it's permanent. They've had it for 7 years and didn't put any DP or permi in. And this year they had a letter from planning to say, you have a pool, we don't have any paperwork for this. Please can you resubmit? So they've had to do retrospective planning.
And that's not easy.
No, there's been a few cases like that because it's not how it used to be. You could get away with it. There wasn't the technology. France are quite behind. We all know France is a little bit behind. I think COVID was, in a way, a good thing in terms of it's made them go more digital and it's made them get into the 21st century a little bit more with things. Rather than using a helicopter or a bloke to go around, they're now using AI.
AI and drones.
They'll use satellite images.
Sophisticated,
And they'll do the comparison from now to 5 years ago, say. And then they'll see if somebody's put a pool in that's not put any...
Even on Google Maps, you can see that sometimes because they do historic kind of...
And they're using AI to check whether there's things in there that they don't know about. So you've got to, you know what I mean? Big Brother's watching.
I mean, in our area, locally, there was a chap on a Facebook group very recently who had built a structure in the back garden and got a little tax notice from Impo to say, just goes to show,
I mean, that's another planning, isn't it? A permis. Well, there's a permis d'aménagement, which is like if you've got a big plot of land and you want to build 2 or 3 houses on there and you've got to do a road, then you have to put that in to see if you're allowed to do it. That comes after the certificat d'urbanisme. You also have to, it's not the permis d'aménagement, but it's the DP, the Déclaration Préalable. You have to do one of those if you want to divide some land up. So if you've got a plot of land at the bottom of your garden that you want to sell off as constructible, then you have to do a déclaration préalable to divide the land. So, yeah.
And to demolish a building.
Really? So yeah. What you have to have permission.
Demolition, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that why we see so many buildings that look like they're in the state of collapse, but that haven't had that kind of permission put forward? So you just drive along and then you just see them, you know, falling into disrepair because nobody wants to take them down.
It can be refused.
I've got a story about that. Yeah, and I'm going to tell it you, and forgive me if I kind of go into my mind palace to try and think about every detail. But there has been a guy recently who did approach us, and he has posted something on Facebook, I think. He's looking for a builder who will help him to reconstruct a wall of his barn that's fallen down. Like, it's in a really bad state of repairs. And the local mairie is pressuring this person to rebuild it, which quite rightly, because it could be dangerous, you know. It might fall down on somebody who's walking past. Unfortunately, this guy put an insurance claim in, and because it is his building, he has got insurance, but because he's not maintained it over the years, he's not taken any responsibility for making sure it's not got into such a bad state. His insurance company's turned him down and said, no, we can't pay it. We won't pay it. And so he's left with the bulk of the work, and it's probably about $100,000 job to construct a full stone wall. You'd have to probably go through planning to make sure that, you know, the local mairie knew you were going to erect it correctly in the way that they want you to. And I don't think he is, you know, not all of us have got $100,000 to spend on a barn. So I think that's sometimes why things are just left to deteriorate.
Yeah.
Even though people are being pressured to do it, they don't have the money to do it, and the insurance doesn't apply.
Or in cases where properties have been inherited, cousins or uncles or whatever live at another part of France, don't want anything to do with that property, are quite happy for it to go into disrepair rather than deal with it.
Protect. Or sell it.
Possibly,
yeah.
I think that goes on to another subject of, like, the inheritance laws in France and how complicated they can be if there's a lot of family members. People just argue about what they want to do with a property, don't they? Some people might have, like, specific kind of memories to that property of the childhood, and then other siblings might not, and one wants to sell it, one doesn't. And I think it just becomes a legal wrangle, perhaps, and it's left lingering.
So I've been put off of buying in Dinan. I've been put off of buying a pavilion where I can't build a shed. I'm thinking of buying a commercial property that's a cafe or open up to the public. What would I need to be mindful of? And I know what you're going to say. It's all about planning. So what kind of planning stems around commercial or properties where I'm going to be allowing the public to come on board?
Well, I suppose, like everywhere, there's certain rules if you're going to be receiving the public. So there's the Établissement Recevant du Public, which applies to public or commercial buildings. So even gîtes, if you have a large gîte that takes over 15 people, so you've got so many bedrooms, there's certain rules where for fire doors, emergency exits, etc. Accessibility. If you want to open a cafe within your beautiful chateau that's got a lovely outbuilding, and you think you can just put a concrete floor in and a Howden's kitchen and go for it, well, you know, no, there's certain rules that you have to follow. So accessibility, fire safety, capacity limits as well, emergency exits. And there's all those certain rules, which is, it's not exclusive to France. It's the same in most countries.
I think here so it's called an ERP.
ERP, Établissement, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was an etiquette de risque, but I suppose that's what kind of describes what it is. It's like a list of risks that you're putting the public to that you have to then submit, and they tell you, well, you have to do this, do that, like you just said. Yeah, that's a planning permission above the permis de construire, I want to say. You can't do that yourself. You'd have to get a qualified architect to do that, just as you would a permeator constructor, if you're constructing something over 20 meters square, then you need an architect. You can't just...
Right.
Yeah, you need to cross all the T's and dot all the I's for that one if you're opening it to the public. So it's, yeah, you need some good advice and information.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say jeet owners, if it's more than 15 people, that it's subject to
I think
this kind of planning.
In the one building, I mean, like I think I was talking to you before we came on air, that we went to see a property and it was a beautiful, beautiful property, but it was all one property and it was segmented into probably five or six different units. And they wanted to put interconnecting doors into each of the units so they could either have it as one big space or they could separate it and rent it out as individual units. Well, because it slept so many people, then you can't just put a normal internal door that locks in. It then goes into fire eggs and all those kind of things. So it's just worth noting that if you want to be changing into a cafe or a bar or whatever, there's certain...
Rules and regulations, yeah.
Yeah,
there is, yeah. And I'd just go back to like a good architect, like working with a good firm a good builder who knows these things also, and who works in close contact with your architect and understands these things is an advantage. Because there are things that, there are general standards on these permissions that are put forward. For example, I think the standard is that you can have one person per meter squared in a building. And so the architect will calculate the meter squareage and say, this building can hold X amount of people in relation to the meter squareage. But I've seen problems where people have just taken that literally and then not taken into account everything they've got to put in the building. Like if you've got like 80 tables, then you can't put one person per meter squared in that building. Or if you're having a bar for a, you know, an event space that's actually integrated and it's not movable, then that takes up another 5 meters squared. A staircase might take up another 8 meters squared. So these things slowly diminish the capacity that maybe a layman might not understand and just take things at face value on their permis de construire, but you really need to be in constant kind of a triangle of information between you, your builder and your architect to understand these processes, I think.
So that leads on to a question. When is it advisable to have or be working with an architect? Could you work with an architect when you've got your property, you've signed for it, you've got your PLU, you know what you want to be doing? Is it ideal to be talking to them then? Or, you know, simple renovations, no, an architect you would call in on certain bigger projects, going back to what you said about capacity, 1 meter, Rosie, when is a good time to kind of bring in the architect and would they kind of turn around and say, no, that's not my bag, you'd be better off talking to a builder like you, Rosie or Sue?
I think if you want to do things in the correct way, then you should engage an architect as soon as possible. You should do your due diligence. If you want to create something that's commercial, it's a big project, you're building an extension or building a new home, or you are renovating in a historical setting near a chateau, for instance, or even a church that's listed, then you should go and find these things out, and architects will do this work for you. And if you don't know the language, I think that's where architects really come into their own, because they are so knowledgeable, or they should be so knowledgeable on all these technicalities, and they can advise you. It's a bit like a needle in a haystack if you assume that you can know all these things yourself.
Yeah.
I think a good estate agent when you buy is also integral, but not all estate agents will be so informed either. So unfortunately, I suppose you're beholden to the estate agent of the house or property that you've fallen in love with. It's not always your choice.
Yeah.
But an architect is your choice. But I would always say, like, from our point of view, being a construction renovations company, who do have an interior architecture branch of our business, that these things should all be done hand in hand. To do things in a separate manner is really kind of myriad with problems, I think. If the architect's done one thing and they're not in contact with the builder and they pass over the plans, and then something changes on site during a build where, so in discovery, the land isn't as you thought it was, or it's not possible to do what the architect's drawn, then the builder should be going back to the architect and getting him to redraw or resubmit or kind of give his advice on how they should proceed. And I don't think everyone gets that. And I think that's really, really important for people to understand. I think if you're just doing an interior renovation, or if you want to change your windows, if you want to change your windows or anything on the facade, do a Déclaration Préalable, try it yourself. If your French is good enough, try it yourself and see where you get. You know, if you're not near a historical building, it's probably easy to do. But if you are, again, going back to the, you know, where your zonage is, are you near a historical building, then sometimes you have to do a Déclaration Préalable for the interior of the building, which I don't think a lot of people realise either, that you can't just rip out an old fireplace, wooden panelling, you know, all the features that made that property historical, even if it's not listed in the first place, because the Bâtiments de France want you to actually put in a documentation for that as well. So you need to check that too. Yeah, there you go. Sorry, I've scared you off even more, Michaela.
Yeah, yeah. I'm before I head to the ferry...
I think that's why it's important to engage all the right people, basically.
But to be fair, I'm going to go the other way now and say a lot of people can't afford to engage an architect straight away. So in that instance, you don't have to have an architect if your building is less than 150 square metres. So say you want, you've got a very, very small property and you want to extend. I wouldn't advise not having an architect. You need somebody to draw the plans properly and you need it doing properly, whether it's a builder or whether it's an architect. If you're doing something like that, I personally would say use one. However, you don't legally have to. Say your house is 70 square metres, you want 20 square metre, 40 square metre. You have to submit the plans and it will have to be a permit, but you don't have to instruct an architect to submit it.
I think you do if it's over 20 meters squared.
It can go up to
20 meters squared. You can do
it, can
you?
Up to 40, yeah. It depends on your PLU again.
There you go, the good old PLU.
So look at your
PLU.
I've got to get this right. I think it's 20 if you're in a historical. And it can go up to 40 under the general PLU.
Yeah.
But it still needs checking. So
I want to pop in here at this point as well and disagree with you, Sue. Only because I agree that you can do it yourself if you're knowledgeable enough.
Yeah.
I hesitate to recommend people to design their own extensions, particularly 40 meters squared. Then they hand it over to a builder. And have you seen some people's drawings that they've submitted?
I'm not saying they should do it, but is they don't have to do it.
I personally, professionally,
would say get an architect to design it for you.
Yeah, no, but if you can't afford it, then you should. This is going back to do your due diligence beforehand and work it into your sale. Think about if it's going to cost you another $5,000 for an architect, then maybe put an offer in $5,000 less. If you've got all of this information, hopefully before you buy, then you can make sure you can afford it.
I personally wouldn't advise going in at $5,000 less just because you want to put an extension on, because that's not the, for me, that's not the
seller's
problem.
Try.
I mean, you can try, but if I was selling... If I was selling and they said, "Oh, I want to put an extension on, it's going to cost me this," I'd say, "Well, off you go. I'm not."
Yeah, well, you don't have to say it because of that. You'd say, Anyway, that's another podcast, as we always say when we.
What are the timelines for all of these planning things? You know, there's a lot of moving parts. As we all know, France can be very slow, particularly during August, non-existent. What can a person expect once they've looked at the PLU, they've created a DP, they're waiting on a CU, they've got to do the affichage de permis? I mean, what are these timescales? I mean, we all know a lot of people get excited when they purchase their properties. They want to crack on. You know, they obviously need to factor in these moving parts. So what would you suggest?
What would you say? As long as there's no certain things that can cause delays, missing drawings or documents, the plans aren't very good. Obviously, ABF can it, usually if it's Battlement to France, there's a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, so that can take a little bit longer. But I would say for something simple, like you want to change the roof. I mean, for ours, we wanted to change the roof. We submitted everything. Everything was fine paperwork-wise. And you get a decision within a month.
That's the quickest you can get a decision.
Yeah, and it's pretty quick. If everything's done properly, and I think it's, for a permit, is it two months?
I think it is 2 months. I might be mistaken. I think it's 2 months. And if you've not heard anything within 2 months, then you can assume it's been passed. But you should contact your Mary and get the certificate to say it's been passed.
Yeah.
But that is the general rule.
You know, assuming it's someone that's a Brit that's subject to 90 days, you know, it's a lot of contention, a lot of things to consider. So ideally working with a project manager that can handle these kind of things in your absence when you're out of the country would be a good move.
Yeah.
I think again, it comes down to budget. I'd always advise, don't listen to somebody down the pub. You know what I mean? When you've had a few.
Like you do.
I mean, if you're not here all the time and it is a holiday home, there are lots of people out there that whether it's a handholder or something like that, that can be your eyes and ears on the ground. Or obviously you're not going to need a project manager to project manage you putting a declaration in for your new windows, but you could probably get somebody to submit it for you, whoever's going to put the windows in possibly. I mean, we've just done one. For one of our clients, that was Battlement de France actually. She actually did her own, but we've done another one since for another client. And I think, they got the certificate through really quickly. It was within the 30 days. I mean, you can have a go yourself. It's not overly complicated.
I also think an important positive thing is that we can say is like if you put a déclaration préalable in or even a permis de construire, and it gets refused the first time, I would advise to keep on going because it's not a definitive no most of the time. It's
could
just the fact that it's a modification.
Yeah.
And maybe go and see your local mairie, or if they've got an urbanisme department, then you make an appointment and go in and you talk with them, you show them the project, and then they will say, well, that's okay, but we'd like you to, and you can you can negotiate. It is negotiable. Mm. Because you can put your point across. And I don't think they're completely unreasonable. I think on face value, it seems like it is like that. The Battlement, we all complain about how difficult it is sometimes. And some of the things we just can't, get our head round. We've had a couple of clients, particularly with fences. Battlement de France seem obsessed with a fence.
In what way, Rosie?
We've worked in a house in front of a lake, which is not near an historical building, but it's a beautiful lake. And the fence has to have a certain look to it. It has to be in wood. It has to have horizontal pieces, a bit like an old-fashioned fence, a country fence. And the size of the pieces of wood have to have between them the same gap as the actual horizontal pieces. So if your first horizontal piece is 20 centimetres and the gap has to be 20, and then the next piece of wood 20, and then the gap 20. And also they'll give you like what height you can do your fence to. So there's that. And it also compromises people's privacy because in our minds, a fence is really put up by the homeowner to have a bit of privacy in the garden, but forget it. if you're in these areas, then they don't care about the privacy. What they care about is the environmental aesthetic around where they can see through the fences. You can have a hedge, but you can't have a solid fence. And that's happened two times.
I'm a bit like Michaela. I don't think I'd like to live near Dinan.
No.
That's not even in Dinan.
But
one was in Finisterre. One was in Finisterre. One was in near Dinan, but not in Dinan. Yeah. I mean, look at your PLU.
I think we're lucky, Rosie, in that you know your area extremely well. I mean, I'm fairly novice to planning. Sue, you're in the BTP trades industry, so your knowledge, the pair of you, is just amazing. And just listening, PLU, CU, DP, you know, they're phrases that I think listeners from after listening to this will think, yeah, I need to be a bit more mindful of it. So before we wrap up, what are the key things that you want our listeners to take away from this session?
Firstly, I think as well, the Service Public Government website, if you put into Google declaration prealable, it will bring up the government website and it will bring up that. And within that, there's an English version, you can click on the English version. You can do a simulation. You can kind of run through your project and it will kind of tell you under the general kind of rule. Obviously, there's all these nuances for battlement defence and et cetera. So you kind of put in your commune, whether your commune's got a PLU or if it's under general and all that kind of thing. And then you can kind of pick what you want to do and it'll kind of tell you. It will say, right, you need a permit for this, you need a DP for that. And I think do your research. Go to the mayor, but also do your own research, because I think it's important that homeowners, rather than outsource it, I think it's good that you kind of have a little bit of an idea of what you're allowed and what you're not allowed to do. Because even the smallest change to the outside of your property, depending on where you are, can spark a DP if you've
outrage
or an inspection or outrage, yeah, depending on where you are and who your neighbours are. And also when you come to sell.
Yeah.
When you come to sell your property now, notaires are more stringent with asking for the paperwork. And if you've not got the paperwork, even if it's, I'd say, 8 years down the line and you've stuck a pool in that you didn't get permission for, the notaire's going to say, well, where's your paperwork? And then you're going to have to go through the process of doing retrospective planning before you sell the property and you've got a buyer, and it just delays things. And
can retrospective planning be refused?
Yes.
Yeah. Nothing's a given.
Right.
I wouldn't ever recommend people do something and have that in mind as like a backup. No. Because it's invariably refused, I would say.
So if it's invariably refused, that means that that homeowner has to replace or put in new planning permission to get whatever has been done incorrectly, done correctly.
Say if you convert your garage into a kitchen and you've not put in planning permission because you're changing usage, and it's, even if it's less than 20 meters squared, and that then you come to sell and you include that in the meter squareage habitable space of your house, the notaire can't just, you know, say, oh, okay, I'll just include another 15 meters squared, because you've not got the documentation to say that you're allowed to convert it. Mm. So it's still a garage, really. It's not habitable space. So then you're essentially reducing the cost or the price of your property. You can't charge someone for something that's been converted that can't be classed as converted. So then that's when a lot of people get into difficulty, because they have to go to do retrospective planning and then find it's not allowed. And like, they've, instead of having like a 120 meter squared of habitable space, they've only got 100. Well, that's a bit of a bad example, because 100 meter squared is quite big, but you know what I mean? It's like, it does affect the value of your home. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So there are a lot of consequences that we've talked about. I think there are a lot of ways that you can find stuff out from your Mary, and Geoportai is probably a good one as well. That's a national database where you can look at a cadastre, and then you can look at the zones of each commune, and that will tell you if it's constructible, non-constructible, and some of the information around that.
If there's any flood risks.
Exactly. Because then if it's
in a flood zone, then the development potential is lessened, and the chances of you being able to develop in terms of extensions and maybe turn outbuildings into habitable space becomes less and less, because they won't let you do it.
Wow.
Buy your property, Michaela. Yeah. Put in all the right... Do your due diligence. Put in all the right authorizations. Get them passed. Put your panel up. Wait 2 months. By that time, you probably waited 6 months. Start your project. But at least you've got peace of mind.
That it's all done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important, peace of mind, because renovating can be very stressful for anybody. Mm.
And also, if you were in the UK... Would you put an extension on in the UK without planning permission?
No.
No, you
probably
would
not.
No.
So, yeah, it's the same, really.
And don't listen to the hype on Facebook all the time. It's not always true.
But what I will say is that if anyone does have a question around planning, that they can contact us via the email address, which is frenchrenodiaries@gmail.com. Or follow us on Facebook at French Renault Diaries. So any questions that people may have around planning, they can meet us there, add their question, and know that they will get a response back to that question factually, correctly, and more importantly, with peace of mind. So I think that wraps up, yeah. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to the show to be sure you don't miss anything. Your hosts have been Rosie Ellis, Michaela Wilkins and Sue Peake Russell. French Renault Diaries Uncensored was produced and mixed by Katie Wright, and the music is by Grand Project.